found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Start your workday off right with the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you so much for joining us. It's Monday, June 10th. We're live every weekday morning at 9 o'clock Pacific at latalkradio.com. And later on that day, you can may download the podcast for listening at your leisure. Free iPhone and Android apps are available to do that, too, from whatever mobile device you are fond of. And we keep the archives up in perpetuity. So if you see a topic that you'd like to know more about, please feel free to download. Like us on Facebook, if you don't mind. Looking to boost those numbers. They matter to people. So I like to be liked. And the websites are MariaSanchezShow.com and TheMariaSanchezShow.com. Going to get into some of the top news stories later in the broadcast, as well as we have a documentary filmmaker visiting with us shortly. She has produced a piece called Beauty and the Breast, and it looks into the, it's an intimate portrait of the realities of breast cancer, 9 women, 1 diagnosis, and how they deal with it. My mother had her right breast removed 6 years ago, and this month, and she's never been the same. And to watch the devastation that has occurred, one, she didn't get a second opinion, which was foolish, and two, every side effect or ramifications or complications that could happen has happened to her. It's destroyed her quality of life. She, in fact, wants on her tombstone the name of the doctor who botched her or mutilated her or disfigured her, as she calls it. She says she's a freak. My mother's describing herself that way because she wants to say that this physician killed her, basically, which she did destroy her life. So hopefully there's some uplifting parts to this documentary. So I participated in corn porn over the weekend, and I was sharing that with a gal yesterday. I was at a memorial that I co-hosted. A dear friend of mine, his 58-year-old sister passed away last week, and there was a lovely memorial that was held at his home. And this gal, I don't know her very well, but boy, did we have a lot in common. And she's going to be a guest on our program later this week because she's all about farm to fork and the latest movements in that regard and how we all can get better about making those kinds of decisions, regardless of where you live. So we're going to chat with her about that. But I told her, because we were talking gardens, I figure a woman like that, she's got to have a garden, right? Well, I've got a garden. And I was talking about the corn. I planted 6 stalks of corn, and they're growing just fabulously, lushly. And all of a sudden, on the top come these things that look like wheat. And so I did some investigation, and I find out they're called tassels. And those tassels produce the pollen that pollinates the stalks of corn that produces the husks of corn. And I also learned that the tassels within the stalk of corn cannot pollinate themselves. Mother Nature gets involved and blows the pollen, which lands on another stalk of corn, thus fertilizing it and creating husks. Well, I didn't know if Mother Nature was doing her due, because I saw lots of tassels, but I didn't see any husks. So I, all last week, have been blowing on the tassels to simulate Mother Nature and the wind, and blowing them from one to another. So I decided to get intimately involved on Saturday, and I cut off several tassels and lovingly stroked up and down the stalks, hoping that I was pollinating and fertilizing. And I was telling this to her and her companion yesterday, and she's like, I'm going to write an article. I'm going to call it corn porn. And I said, no, I called it corn porn. I have adopted that. She goes, okay, I'll give you attributions, but I can't not write about this. So I'll keep you posted to see if my corn porn was successful, because I was involved in the mating ritual, if you will, about the stalks of corn. And then in addition to the corn, I have planted green bell peppers, basil, which is not flourishing, much to my chagrin, because I've always had great basil. Cucumbers for the first time, and I picked my first cucumber on, I think it was on Friday. It was about 10 inches long, and I thought, okay, I think that's big enough. Beets, tomatoes, artichoke, zucchini, six different chili peppers, which they are prolifically producing, which is fabulous, and I put those in pots. Strawberries, and I also did that upside down thing that they have on, as seen on TV. I found it at the 99-cent store, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to try this. And I put strawberries in there, and it doesn't seem to be working. And it's like, well, they say to water copiously daily, which I've been doing because I follow directions really well. And then the water comes down, obviously, because gravity pulls it down and runs over the strawberries, which looks to me like it's making them rot because strawberries do not like water at all. I learned that the hard way. Bought a huge case of strawberries, put it in the sink in water to soak the dirt off of it, got distracted, came back, and they had absorbed. They're almost like a sponge, and it was a sink of mush, so don't do that. I understand you're not supposed to do that with mushrooms either, so I don't think my upside-down experiment is going to work. But they always advertise it with tomatoes, but nevertheless, the tomatoes would be getting watered from the top down also. But it said upon reading further that you can plant blah, 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 and strawberries was one of the ones mentioned. So I did that. So I'll be your real life example into gardening. Okay, so there is some good news today, which I love. We love to focus on good news whenever possible. The credit rating agency Standard & Poor's today has upgraded its credit outlook for the United States government to stable from negative, saying the likelihood of a near-term downgrade of the rating is less than 1 in 3. In August of 2011, S&P had downgraded the U.S. credit rating from the top-rated AAA to AA+, which is the second-highest rating, and had left the U.S. credit outlook at negative at that time. So we've got good news on a Monday, which is always good. And the biggest story is about this 29-year-old former CIA employee who is responsible for letting us know how the U.S. National Security Agency, or NSA, obtained data from the 121 million Verizon telephone users. So he's come public with that, and that's in the news because he did an interview over the weekend, and he is in Hong Kong. That's where he fled to. And he gave the information to The Guardian, which is a UK publication, and that's the one who broke the story, as well as The Washington Post, classified documents. And the NSA has requested a criminal probe into the leaks, and yesterday the U.S. Justice Department said it was in the initial stages of a criminal investigation. So you can see and listen to his interview online, which is very compelling, and he makes some interesting quotes. And ordinarily, I like people to follow the rules, and I think that helps with our structure. I think it helps with our society. It's organized chaos, if you will. I'm not much for moles. I'm not much for leaks and that sort of thing. But he's making some compelling statements. I had an interesting discussion with a small group of friends on Friday night about talking about the leaks. And they all looked at me, and they're like, Maria, you don't think this has been going on forever? I was like, well, not to this extent, not like a blanket thing. I thought that, you know, yeah, we of course lines are tapped and it's et cetera, but I thought there was probable cause involved or, you know, suspicion of terrorism. And they're like, no, but how can you be so naive? So this guy has said that he did it because he thinks that the United States will be better off with knowing that this information has been the solicitation of it and the aggregating of it has been going on. So some of his quotes, they said, interviewer said, why did you decide to become a whistleblower? And he says, the NSA has built an infrastructure that allows it to intercept almost everything. With this capability, the vast majority of human communications are automatically ingested without targeting. If I wanted to see your emails or your wife's phone, all I have to do is use Intercepts. I can get your emails, passwords, phone records, credit cards. I don't want to live in a society that does these sorts of things. I do not want to live in a world where everything I do and say is recorded. That is not something I am willing to support or live under. Now, keep in mind, he's a 29-year-old. So he said things. One of the greatest fears he has is that his family and those that have been in touch with him will be affected. And so he's saying that he can't communicate with them because he knows that they're not going to be safe. He also says, because they asked him the question, is it possible to put security in place to protect against state surveillance? His answer is, you're not even aware of what is possible. The extent of their capabilities is horrifying. We can plant bugs in machines. Once you go on the network, I can identify your machine. You will never be safe, whatever protections you put in place. And then they asked, does your family know you are planning this? No, my family does not know what is happening. My primary fear is that they will come after my family, my friends, my partner, anyone I have a relationship with. I will have to live with that for the rest of my life. I am not going to be able to communicate with them. They, and they're suggesting he means the authorities, will act aggressively against anyone who has known me. That keeps me up at night. So there's a grassroots movement that's going to be happening in July 4th. It's called the In Defense of the Fourth Amendment, and it's called Restore the Fourth Amendment. So this grew out of the site Reddit. And Reddit, if you're not familiar with it, that's basically a 20-something site. My sons, that's where they get everything. Their news, that's where they go to see what's going on with the world. I finally logged on last week, I think it was even Friday, to see what the world was like. And it's a young person's world. You can just tell by their comments and by what they post. And they do post international things and all. But nevertheless, it's interesting to see how they view the world. And we are now speaking with Liliana. Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez.
Good morning, Maria.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you today?
I'm terrific, and thank you for joining us. And rather than butcher your last name, would you say it for us, please?
Komorowska.
Komorowska. Nice.
Yes, Liliana Komorowska.
And it's you have Polish roots.
Yes, I have Polish origin, right.
And your documentary is called Beauty and the Breast, and you actually live in Canada, and you're here in Southern California for a couple days. Tell us about why you created this documentary and this view, and what was your reasons for doing so, and how did you find the 9 women that you profile?
Well, it was a complete surprise for me. In my life, I did not know that at one point, as an actress, producer of documentaries and other short films, I will become a director. And it happened because there is something in this universe that allows you to bring, if you search for it, the forces to come out with a different means, artistic means of expression. And I'm in a prime time. I'm a woman over 50, and I was looking for a different way of trying to find what I can do better, how I can make my life meaningful and help the world. And so my dear husband introduced me to a breast cancer patient, Soraya, who came to me for help in sorting out the material that she shot for a few days while she was going through the chemotherapy. Imagine, I really never thought about breast cancer in my life, even though I had 2 grandmothers passing from a cancer, and they were in their 50s, and I never met them. It was a long time ago, and I never met them, and I passed, and I put it aside. So when this woman came to me for help, and she looked beautiful, radiant, and she had very short hair, I thought it fashionable, but no, she said it was because she lost her hair. And then my life took a full stop, and I couldn't go without having a better perspective on this disease and on this subject. I did not know enough of it, and I was very scared of this subject, cancer. I thought it's a deadly disease, and I thought people that are going through it, they must be very, very scared and of death and all this stuff. And I must admit, I was ignorant, and that ignorance triggered this force inside of me saying, well, this is going to be a tribute to this woman because she came to me for help, and I can't let her down. this is going to be also a great challenge, and I do not like to back away from this challenge. And I was very compelled by her confession when I saw the material, and I said, Soraya, if you can allow me to enter your life and to follow you, that's where it all started. And she allowed me to enter her life with her two children, with all her therapies and her other post-operations and treatments. And then she opened the world to me, and the hospitals and the doctors opened other venues so I could meet nine women. And this is a portrait of those nine women. And it's demystifying this deadly disease while painting this poignant and sometimes even humorous intimate portrait of struggle, survival, and hope.
Now, Liliana, why did she come to you, and what kind of help was she looking for?
She was looking for a help because she went to a chemotherapy and she did not know what to do with her energy over there. She came with a friend with a video camera, and she was shooting some interviews. And then she did not know what to do with this material.
She said,
one thing I wanted to let know, the world, that if there is a time in your life, then the adversity strikes, you have to take responsibility for your health, and you have to look into it, look the monster and the beast in the eye, and try to find the strength because it's so hard, and try to get over with it and find the way how to deal with it. And also, she was so extremely shocked when she heard that some women did not want to take chemotherapy, and they after passed away. And also her husband died of, not her husband, her father died of prostate cancer because he didn't take chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. So for her, it was a mission of saying, I want to show the world, to demystify that that chemotherapy is not going to kill you, that it's going to get you where you need to be because it's a systemic treatment that you need to take. So I took over from that moment on, and I extended the subject. It took me 4 years, and I met those other women with different perspectives of how to deal with the disease. Each one has a different story to say, and I felt that their voice is so important, and I would love the world to see it and to inspire themselves on those stories.
Now, obviously, every woman has a different diagnosis, a different stage that it's diagnosed in, and different methodology to treat it. Were all nine of these gals proactive with the treatments that they sought?
Absolutely not. It's a cautionary tale because a lot of them had a first sign, and they were long trying to just get over with it, to deny it. Then they went to doctors who said, well, you're much too young to have anything, and some pathology tests were wrong. And so it's how difficult some of that, for some of them, it was extremely difficult to just get a diagnosis because they were not ready to hear it. And also because some of the mistreatments in this world are giving you a lesson that one diagnosis of one doctor is not enough. Mm-hmm. You always need to have a second choice and go for a second diagnosis. And then you know that being a woman is the main factor of developing this breast cancer, and we don't know where it comes from. I wanted to go to the bottom of it. I wanted to go to the doctors and find out, tell me, what can we do to prevent it? And, you know, the only way that these doctors told me how to prevent it is to take care of yourself, listen to your own body, and exercise, don't smoke, your weight needs to be also in a certain way. So, you know, this is just a common factor that we all know. And I was just going around in circles saying, how do we save ourselves from this disease? And there is no way. And that's where it was for me a shock. And I needed to get into the realization that the only way we can do is to hold ourselves together in it and to make our forces, put our forces together to demystify whatever this disease is about and to take responsibility for your good health right now, today. And the only prevention we can have is to be very aware of what is our body telling us and to try to live a healthy and happy life.
Well, you're
a happy life.
Helping me, yes. Liliana, to share with you and with our listeners a story that's in the news today, that's an article that's being published in Obstetrics and Gynecology. So if younger folks are listening, because we can't, you and I can't do anything about this now, but they're saying that breastfeeding is a way to help relieve breast cancer. Also, they're saying hypertension and heart attacks as well. But only 25% of, this is in the United States, women breastfeed for the recommended 12 months per child. So this is fairly big, good news. Now, I breastfed all four of mine, but I came from a culture that that was what you did and that's what you do. Apparently, not very many people do it if there's only women, obviously. So if you're listening out there and you're of childbearing age, whether you're male or female, highly encourage that. Obviously, breastfeeding benefits the child, but now they're saying this study is that 5,000 cases of breast cancer could have been prevented, 54,000 cases of hypertension, and nearly 14,000 heart attacks annually. And then, of course, the health care costs, what is, that's almost $1 billion that it would save all of us. So that's something that you might want to use in, as you move forward with your interviews. Again, it's being published in Obstetrics and Gynecology. So tell me this, Liliana. The second opinion is so critical. I'm glad you shared that. My mother, before you were on the air with me, I shared with the listeners that she had her right breast removed 6 years ago, and she didn't get a second opinion, and she's had nothing but complications and side effects ever since. So I'm glad that you're sharing that message. And then, is there any other commonality? I mean, the self-breast exams, the mammograms, those sorts of things, or in terms of detection and prevention?
Well, you know, the most important factor in this terrifying disease is that you might have a look at your family, and it's not only from the mothers and the women in your family that have cancer, but also the father, because the cancers are hormonally inclined, so it means that you are more inclined in your life having the heritage of in your family of this disease or just cancer itself. Some women are going to the extent of trying to find out if they actually have a mutated gene, which is a BRCA1 or 2. And if they do, that is like a time bomb. And the genetic doctors, you know, the big experts were telling me that to have that in your body and to live with it, you have 87% chances of developing breast cancer and 50% chances of developing ovarian cancer. So living with this consciousness, sometimes it's extremely tough, because the only way to prevent is to go every 3 months to MRI or to other tests to find out if the cancer is developing or not. But their most radical prevention, it is to have double mastectomy without even being sick, exactly like Angelina Jolie did. And I have in my extras, in my DVD, the film is going to come out in October this year on the VOD, and people will be able to watch it, that there is a character in my documentary, outside of the documentary, because I thought it was very radical. She decided to do, after giving birth to her two children, to go for radical double mastectomy with the reconstruction, and then she went for oophorectomy, which is taking the ovary, because she said, I could sleep better at night. I know from 87% chances of having a cancer in my lifetime, I'm down to 5% or even less.
Which is what Angelina's, those are the same figures that Angelina Jolie was talking about. So that's, in terms of Beauty and the Breast, though, we can't see it until October?
Yes. I mean, yes, exactly. But there is some festivals like LA Indie Film Festival in August next, where we will be able to see it to be determined exactly which week. I think it's in the second or third week of August that the film is going to be shown in the Los Angeles area on the circle of the festival. But otherwise, October is the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I'm very, very privileged and happy that there is a wonderful company that is going to distribute this film in the United States and in Europe.
So how heady must this be for you? Because obviously you've worked in front of the camera, but now to have been behind the camera and about something that's a documentary, not frivolous, not just entertainment, but actually a message, what has that experience been like for you?
Well, it's It's been very touching. It's been very turbulent. It took 4 years to complete this film. I became extremely close with the women, and I created this bond, created a different sort of family, and I felt that I was welcomed into that family because they were very insistent, wonderful women, insistent of letting through me. They knew that I was the messenger of the truth, so I was very privileged, humbled by this experience, and extremely, ready to do something like that and to bring forward this message, the message of the mystification of this monster that's not bigger than us, and showing the solidarity, the bond, and how you create your own way of dealing with it and not losing the quality of life, which is so important. And I was with some of my subjects very close till the end, and with some of my subjects I'm on daily basis, on Twitter, on Facebook, on phone calls, and we do fundraisers together. Just recently there was one fundraiser that I was participating in and being an associate of it. And I'm very, very happy that I found a different meaning in my life that gave a different perspective, you know. And so it's not about glam and glamour, and it also is about women and their inner beauty that is a triumphant. And it's so important once you fight this disease. And that's where, you know, for me, I armed myself, and I know so much more about it, and I can serve as a good example of saying that if you have a knowledge, that's your power. And I think that this film could inspire and empower and encourage the whole world responsibility of your good health. And
one of the things that I found interesting in your press materials is that you use the term mutilated figures. And people don't usually say that. My mother speaks that way of herself. She says, I've been mutilated and I'm a freak. And I found that interesting because usually we're a little bit, bit more poetic about how we talk about the post-surgery bodies. Do you want to explain why you said that?
Well, one of my subjects, Suzanne, who went through chemotherapy and mastectomy almost like within weeks, she woke up from the operation table and she was all bandaged, and she stood in front of the mirror looking at her reflection and not recognizing herself. She said, I really did not know what to do. It was not me. And so she was not having one hair left on her head, and that body that covered, no breath, mutilated, right? So that's when I looked at her and I said, because I could, you know, being behind the camera, it gave me so much courage to pose those bold questions, because it's very intimate, you know, it's so intimate to talk about it on screen in front of the people you don't know, because they're the crew and the camera. And she said, yes, I unwrapped these bandages and I looked at myself and I realized that this is the first encounter with my new self. And this film is about 9 women that go through the same diagnosis, that each one of them tries to find a new life in it. And that, yes, we have to come to terms with these mutilated bodies. And yes, we have to reject the regular, normal way of having the way that the society looks at the woman, you know, because it doesn't recognize a woman as it is without breasts. And the other character in my film, Valerie, she said, I am bigger than the sum of my breasts. So that's where I find that to deal with the feminine aspect of this atrocious disease that takes it away from you, but yet it doesn't, because if we recompose and transform ourselves and find that inner beauty, it's not going to make us less feminine and less beautiful, even though the most feminine attributes, breasts, are not there. And some of the women decide not to do the reconstruction because they said enough of this horror of going to hospitals and going through anesthesia and going through this. And you know, another very interesting tip is that if you had radiation on the mutilated breast, I would say, on mastectomy, and you want to go through reconstruction, you have 40% chances of failure of this operation.
Well, that's my mom.
So there is another.
Yeah, her skin has been burned irreparably, and it's so thin and tender that she can't even wear a bra because she can't take something touching her skin. So that's also the poor little thing. She wears vests and scarves and stuff because her left breast is hanging. She's 80 years old and she's got no breast on the right hand side. So she puts her hands in front of her most of the time, like trying to shield your gaze. So I've seen it firsthand, and what I help her, she puts something on to help with the pain. It's a rub, and the incision goes all the way to the half, like to her shoulder blade on the back. So she can't rub back there, so I'll rub, you know, all the way around. And she's like, oh, that hurts. The applying of the pain medicine, the pain cream or whatever, it's just been devastating. So I can't applaud you enough for doing this. And before we finish our conversation, I'd like to put some light on your foundation. Do you want to share with our listeners what that's about?
Well, I have a foundation called Liliana Komorowska Foundation for the Arts. And it just deals with a broader spectrum of, bringing different communities. Like, I have a big attachment to a Polish community and art, and sharing it with the world that I'm living in, which is a new adopted country, Canada. I live in Canada since 1994, and I'm very proud Canadian Polish origin. So that's where my foundation comes from. But I'm very, very involved with a lot of causes and involved with bringing awareness and participating in walks, walkathons, and saving the lives through raising money in the hospitals that I'm attached with, through the women that allowed me to go and open their lives to me. And I was so humbled by their story. So I'm very attached to certain hospitals in Montreal and raising money anytime I can, with Lucy, who is a subject in my, and with Wendy, who fought her cancer with sense of humor, and she always wanted to become an entertainer, and she is actually touring Canada with her one-woman show, and she's doing a stand-up as she was doing when she discovered this amazing courage inside of her, saying, Liliana, finally I can do what I always thought about, but now the priorities are so straight, now I can just go and be myself on stage. And she was bold on stage, going through chemotherapy and doing her one-woman show, stand-up comedy with songs and stuff. So that's what's most encouraging, you know, that you change your life, and it could be a gift of change that is welcomed sometimes, very surprisingly, to those women that never felt how much strength and inner force they had. So that's for me a life-changing experience. And that, therefore, you know, I'm not giving up on allowing this film to be shown to as many people as I could, because I've seen the faces of these women inspired. And I had an amazing encounter with a woman who came to me. She said, Liliana, you know, you saved my life. I said, how come? Because after I saw this film, I went to a mammogram, to do a mammogram, and I discovered a lump. And now I'm already after my chemo and everything. And thank you so much for giving me that first impact was that I need to go and check myself. Yeah. And that's what I aim for, helping, just because you don't think about it.
Liliana, do you have any excerpts from the stand-up act in your future film that the breast cancer patient did?
Yes, I do.
Yes,
of course I
nice.
Do. Singing, and yes.
Nice.
And she's there, she talks about it, and she's very, very animated, saying, I discovered it, I was so shy, I almost wanted to do it, but now it's time, and she did it. And
excellent.
I encouraged her also, because I said, well, you know, laughter is healing, and she said, wow, it was the most important in my life.
How fabulous.
It really helped me so much going through. And other women through dealing with animals, you know, Lucy is a passionate horseback rider, and she actually recently, her horse passed away, the one who gave her all the strength while going through chemo, and she said, Liliana, I thank you so much for doing this film, because it immortalized the most amazing relationship I had with my horse. And because of him, I'm today here.
Yay, yay, yay.
I wouldn't be able to do it without him. Okay, so those are the stories that I think that, you know, if you come and see the film, you yourself might find something for you, and it could be a life-changing experience.
Well, I want to bring my mama. Tell me, Liliana, do you have a website you want to share?
Yes. Our website is beautyandthebreastmovie1word.com. And I have an account on Twitter, which is Beauty and the Breast, one word, Twitter account, and a Facebook page, Beauty and the Breast. So please welcome to my page, to my Twitter, and to my website, and you will follow all the awards that the film got. It got a public award, which is, you know, the soothing wonderful award when, you know, the public loves the film, from World Montreal Film Festival, and two awards from London Critic Award, and I won actually Miami International Film Festival, the Women's Film Festival.
Yay!
And,
Nice.
It's absolutely amazing. So I'm, you know, very happy that I've done my job, and now the film lives and it has its own audience, creates its own audience. And but it's, the most important is that it's important. You know, it's so meaningful, and we need stories that inspire us and that encourage us on daily basis, and also because it helps to remind us how proud we can be of each other.
Thank you so much, because that just fits right into what we aspire to do on our program, is to acknowledge and good stories and inspirational ones, and yours is all wrapped up into that. Welcome to Southern California. I hope you enjoy your time here, and thank you for joining us, Liliana.
Thank you very much, Maria. It was a pleasure talking to you.
And to you. Take care. Thank you so much. She's here just for 3 days, and today's her first day in town. Beauty and the Breast, Liliana Camarosa, and we'll, of course, post her contact information on our website later today when we post the podcast. And to reference back to the study that was in the news this morning, it was led by Harvard researcher Dr. Melissa Bartik, and it simulated the experiences of about 2 million women from the United States from the time they were 15 until they turned 70. We've got an inquiry into her to see if she'll come and share the details on the program more specifically. But it says that, she says, the point is that breastfeeding boosts a mother's health in a big way. And their final statement is that this points out that breastfeeding is not a lifestyle choice. It's a public health imperative. So for those of you who are of childbearing age or considering having a child, be you man or woman, please encourage the mother to breastfeed. My mom breastfed in an era when it was so passé, because it came out about that if you could bottle feed, why wouldn't you? Why would you have your baby suckling on to you when you could assign that task to somebody else? And it also was a social status statement that if you could afford the formula, then that meant that you were more well off. And so women started to bottle feed, not breastfeed, in massive numbers. And I will never forget, my youngest brother is 10 years younger than I am. So I was aware, I mean, when he was born, oh boy, did I hit a maternal stage in my life. I used to say, yeah, she may be the mother, but I'm the caretaker, because I had him on my hip since I could hold him. And my mom breastfed him like she did us. But of course, I don't remember that, but I remember her breastfeeding him. And she would put a shawl or a blanket or some kind of nappy or whatever over her and my brother to shield others from seeing that, which in other cultures they don't do that. They just whip out the breast, and of course, other cultures are topless, so we're pure technical here in the United States. But and she would also put her chair outside the room where they were having friends over or company or dinner, or I remember my folks were very active socially. They were entertaining all the time. And that was because that was really not condoned. It was frowned upon. So now they're giving. So my mom breastfed for 6 months. And some of my decisions that I made as a young mother, when I look back on, were so ignorant. I didn't do the research, which one of my adages is knowledge is power. Find out. I breastfed for 6 or 7 months, depending on the child, because that's what my mom did. Little did I know that you're supposed to continue to 12 months. That's where the benefit is derived by the child, and now they're saying by the mother, is for up to 12 months. After 12 months, they say that there's no real value to the breastfeeding exercise. And I guess because my children naturally by the time I had stopped breastfeeding, it was they were only breastfeeding first thing in the morning and right before I put them to sleep. So then that the first thing in the morning kind of stopped, and then so it just kind of trickled off. But I didn't know to continue it. So here they're saying yes, do it, and it's not only should you do it, they're saying give to at least 1 year. Could stave off up to 5,000 cases of breast cancer. This is per year, by the way. 54,000 cases of hypertension and nearly 14,000 heart attacks annually. Averting those diseases could also save $860 million in the health care cost. So if you were on the fence about that, don't be. So here's something fabulous that's in the news today. The U.S. government has recovered 400 pages from the long-lost diary of Alfred Rosenberg, who was a confidant of Adolf Hitler. And they're saying it includes details about the German occupation of the Soviet Union, plans for mass killings of Jews and other Eastern Europeans, as well as the Nazi looting of Jewish art. So this assessment has been prepared by the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington. It's a cursory review. They're going to announce this later this week. So this is the first inkling that we've got is this morning in the news. If you get a chance to go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, I cannot recommend it highly enough. I was in D.C., about 3 or 4 years ago, visiting a girlfriend, and it was a reunion. A group of us gals went to Senegal, Africa, to dig a well for the women of this village, and we were strangers when we embarked on that journey. We went in November of 2008, and then we had a reunion, so it was June of 2009. So I've stayed with one of the gals I met. She turned 73 while we were on the Senegal trip, so that makes her, well, late 70s now. And she said to me, I'm going to make reservations to get to go to the Holocaust Museum. I don't think it costs. You just have to, they only take X amount of visitors per hour. And she said, so we got in at 11 o'clock and just be prepared to spend 2 hours. And I'm thinking, 2 hours? How can I spend 2 hours in misery? Just, I couldn't imagine. Well, they kicked us out when they closed. I think it was 5 o'clock. Just thinking about it brings tears to my eyes. It's so poignant and so utterly just amazing, the atrocity that man can do to mankind. And at the time, I was a director of communications and development for the American Red Cross, and the Red Cross was the only other entity that they mentioned in the Holocaust Museum, and that was, of course, when they would allow them to come to the concentration camps to see how they were treated, and of course they would fake it just like the Japanese did in World War II with the American Red Cross visits. But this man, this criminal, he was hanged in 1946, but his writings were part of the trial, and the content of his diary was used in the prosecution of he and other war crime victims. So he directed the Nazi Party's Foreign Affairs Department and edited the Nazi newspaper, and several of his memos to Hitler were cited as evidence during the post-war Nuremberg trials. He also directed the systematic Nazi looting of Jewish art, cultural, and religious property throughout Europe. So his diary was held by the Nuremberg prosecutors as evidence, and it disappeared after the trial. So it's his daughter that uncovered them in a storage unit and is making them public. So she, not his daughter, it was another man who they think, pardon me, the prosecutor, Robert Kempner, it's his daughter that has uncovered them. And so that's making the news today. And they're going to make more details later. Also making the news today from another man's archives, excuse me, he's been dead for 51 years. His name is Fred Otash. He was Hollywood's most notorious private detective. His files were uncovered, and they are being released. He was the Hollywood private detective that was bugging Marilyn Monroe's home. And on August 5th of 1962, he recorded that she had a violent argument with both Kennedys, and she was screaming that she felt like she'd been passed around like a piece of meat. His notes read, she was really screaming and they were trying to quiet her down. And this is his quote from his diaries. She's in the bedroom and Bobby gets the pillow and he muffles her on the bed to keep the neighbors from hearing. She finally quieted down and then he was looking to get out of there. So only later he found out that she had died, I believe, that night. So he's also among the stars he bugged was Rock Hudson, whose wife apparently confronted him about his homosexuality and told him to grow out of it. So he died in 1992, and his life story was the inspiration for the private investigator Jack Nicholson played in the 1974 film Chinatown. So there's more that's going to be uncovered about that, too. And then we have a new and annoying species here in the United States. It's from Argentina and Brazil. It's been identified since 2002 in Houston. It has spread to Florida and a few locations in Mississippi and Louisiana, so be aware of it, called the crazy ant. And what it does is it's attracted to electrical wiring. So get this. If you find it, you should call a pest control company, because the chemicals that kill the more common red ant aren't effective on the crazy ants. So the insects are attracted to electrical wiring, and what they do is when one ant discovers the transformer, it gets electrocuted when it touches it. It waves its abdomen in the air, emitting a certain scent. That scent lures other ants to the scene, who are also then electrocuted, again sending the scent in the air to attract other ants. Eventually, there's so many dead ants that the electric switches get stuck or the insulation fries and the system shuts down. So it has completely also eliminated the red ant or fire ant, and no one knows why. And so they're calling it the crazy ant, and it'll destroy anything electronic in its path. And this is the story we didn't get to share with you last week about what lengths people are doing to lose weight. This is by a Beverly Hills plastic surgeon. His name is Nicholas Chugay. It's a procedure that he created in 2009. He says it can help you lose up to 30 pounds in 1 month. Okay, so it sounds pretty exciting, doesn't it? What is it? It's a plastic patch that is sewn onto your tongue, which makes it difficult to eat. So it's secured with 6 stitches, making consuming solid food so painful that you're forced to resort to a liquid-only diet. So you may experience swelling of the tongue, difficulty with speech, trouble sleeping, difficulty moving your tongue at all. It can only be worn for a maximum of 1 month, since after that time, the tongue's tissue begins to grow back. And he provides you with an easy-to-follow liquid diet of 800 calories a day. I have a girlfriend that went on that HCG diet like 3 or 4 years ago, which is the some kind of growth hormone thing, and she claimed that it helped her lose 30 pounds. Well, what she didn't mention is that she was also on a 1,000 calorie a day diet, and it was like, you could have lost that weight without the thing. It's supposed to convert the fat to losing it and all this stuff. It's like, no. So it's a postage size stamp. It's made from Marlex, which is a plastic that's used in mesh to repair hernias, and it's also the principal material used to make the hula hoops. The procedure cost $2,000. He says he's done it to just over 60 women since 2009. But here's something about our healthcare costs. But in Venezuela, it costs $150. But Venezuela, by the way, has the largest beauty industry per capita in the world. So they have clinics in Caracas that this gal, Ana Maria Parra, has done, and she says she's done up to 900 clients a month since she began offering the procedure in 2011. According to Time magazine, the average Venezuelan woman spends 20% of her annual income on cosmetics and beauty treatments, which is why they're known as the largest per capita beauty industry in the world. There was a story that we shared last week about a woman who got buttocks implants, and it turned out that it was not the product that it was intended to, that she's subsequently had to have her butt amputated and all 4 of her limbs amputated because she wanted a bigger butt. How about let's just work on accepting ourselves for who and what we are. Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show. Hope you have a great day. Look forward to visiting with you tomorrow morning.